Thank you very much. I am going to present a paper that deals with international equity markets. That is joint work with Karen Lewis of the University of Pennsylvania and Emilio Osambela of Carnegie Mellon. Roger asked me to insist on the empirical side, so I will motivate the paper by the empirical evidence and give you a little bit of a clue of the theory that we have developed, and then triumphantly show you how well the theory fits the data. So I'm afraid there will be only one slide on the theory, which is a pity because it is a very elaborate and astute theory, which has leads to an explicit solution for asset prices. So to start the first with some domestic evidence, the excess volatility puzzle has been mentioned several times today, which was first presented in 81 by Leroy and Porter and Schiller. And this diagram of Bob Schiller has been in my mind all the time. I consider the excess volatility puzzle as the premier puzzle that we need to solve. If we solve that, maybe I feel the others will follow. And this diagram, of course, represents over a century P star, which is the present discounted value of realized dividends, and P, which is the detrended, both of them detrended, stock market S&P 500 index. P should be less volatile than P star, and it's obvious to the plain eye that the opposite is true. And so there have been several explanations proposed, and I don't have time to explain them all since I only have 30 minutes, which is 5 minutes less even than what was in the schedule. But to me, the most natural explanation is that people change their mind a lot, more than purely Bayesian learners would do. And so I published a paper in the Journal of Finance in 2009 exploiting this idea that there's a group of people who overreact to some signals and create excess volatility, and then the others are trying to do what you were suggesting. They're trying to take advantage of that. And we show how quickly they would be able to take advantage of that and by what portfolio strategy. So today, I want to build on that previous work, and extend it to the international setting. And so in the international setting, let me show you some striking graphs. These are capital, these are billions of dollars on the vertical axis. And why exactly not, but I have a way of representing the way in which they change their mind too much. Now, why in their physiological setup they do that, I don't know. I will take that for granted that there are some people who overreact. And I will give some plausible some evidence and some argument that shows the plausibility of that in a minute. So these are the capital flows into and out of Chile, for instance. Here, what is called a gross inflow is a purchase of Chilean securities by foreigners. And what is called a gross outflow is a purchase of foreign securities by Chileans. You can see that, especially in recent years, these quantities have been fluctuating enormously, and with flows that reverse themselves at a tremendous speed. And the only conceivable interpretation that I can see is that Chilean investors on the one hand and non-Chilean investors must disagree on what the value of Chilean and foreign securities is, and they must disagree in a highly fluctuating way. That is, they don't all are over-optimistic about Chilean security. It's not the case that one category is systematically over-optimistic relative Chilean securities, the other one pessimistic. They must be changing their mind a lot. This is a similar diagram for Brazil. You can see that the same pattern arises. And so we have here a phenomenon which is very important, which has serious implications for policymaking in the countries, given that the world is now well integrated and these capital flows keep occurring. I'm not saying they are too large, capital flows. They may be too small, but I'm saying they are too fluctuating. They are more fluctuating than theory would say. And so these are some of the empirical facts that we need to explain, but this is only one of many. We have, in this paper, we have grouped the puzzles, if you like, into four categories, but there are more of them. The list is actually longer. So I've mentioned international capital flows. These capital flows have this property of being very volatile, as I just explained. They also have the property of co-moving a lot with the stock market prices. That is more often than not, there's an inflow into a country, that is, foreigners buy the country's security when at the same time the prices of these securities go up. Okay. Not saying which is the cause or which is the effect. It happens together. The second empirical fact is the phenomenon of home equity preference. If you look at the portfolios of people, they tend to hold more of the equity of the firms of their own country than full diversification would advise them to do. This is our two puzzles, two empirical puzzles at the country level, if you like. And we have also identified two more at the firm level. If you try to apply CAPM-like models to the international setting, you would expect the main price factor to be the world market portfolio. And in fact, you will find that if a security is listed in one country, then it tends to co-move and be priced more by the stock market index of the place where it is listed. And secondly, there's a very nice experiment that that takes place frequently, which tells us something about the way in which international financial markets operate, which is cross-listings. A firm is listed in one country, and suddenly, for some reason, the management of that company decides to also list their stock in another stock exchange. The evidence is that the price of this company jumps up on the announcement of the cross-listing, and subsequently the required rate of return is reduced, as I will show you in a minute with numbers. So let's review quantitatively these four puzzles. Capital flow sensitivity to price changes. If you regress, don't ask me why we regress one on the other or vice versa. That's not the point here. This is still, either way, it's puzzling. If you regress the capital flow on the price changes, you find a very strong and significant coefficient of this order of magnitude. So this is the capital flow regressed on the price change of the the stock market receiving the capital flow. Depending on the countries, you get a coefficient of this order of magnitude, which is more than what a rational model would suggest. Or you can also look at the correlation between the two, and it's not small and it's significant. Home equity preference, this is the proportion in the US, in a US portfolio, the proportion of the share of home equity held, of US equity held by US investors themselves. 75%, obviously. This is much more than the relative wealth of US investors in the world economy. And so we have to explain why US investors like US equities so much. And that's true for most countries, even in small countries like Hong Kong, people tend to favor Hong Kong equity. If you look at the betas of a CAPM, regressing stock returns on the stock market index of the country where the security is listed versus the rest of the world, a factor for the rest of the world, you will always find, systematically, a much larger beta coefficient on the stock market of the country where the firm is listed and primarily traded, with almost a negligible loading on the foreign factor. In a world that we think is fairly integrated, that the place of listing should have such an impact on the statistical properties of the returns. And finally, on the cross-listing empirical evidence, Caroli surveyed the literature on that and finds that most studies show an increase in price of the cross-listing as the impact effect of 1.5 to 7%. And an often cited explanation for this behavior is that the event provides new information or new visibility about the firm. I want to show you a diagram which is especially telling on the cross-listing, on the impact of cross-listing on portfolio choices of people. It's in a paper by Ahern, Warnock, and the third author, whose name I should have written down, and I forgot, I did not, in Journal of Finance 2004. This is for US portfolios. For various countries, other countries of the world, on the x-axis, you have the share of the foreign market listed, of the foreign stock market listed in the US, on US stock exchanges, so cross-listed on US stock exchanges. And on the vertical axis for these countries, you have the degree of the home equity bias, so the degree to which US investors hold too little, of that foreign country compared to what standard diversification would say. Well, you would see, for instance, that the country which has the largest number of firms in dollar terms cross-listed in the US is the Netherlands, and it is also the one for which the degree of the bias is smallest. It's still a fair amount of bias, but the amount of bias is smallest. Of course, other countries have less of their firms cross-listed in the US, and the bias increases. As you can see, there's a clear relationship between these two facts. So cross-listing does seem to change the way in which people apprehend or perceive the returns from the stocks. So, what is our interpretation of these facts? Our interpretation is fluctuating differences in beliefs. I'm not sure whether we've been well inspired to call that sentiment, but anyway, That's what it is, fluctuating differences in beliefs. We have constructed a model of a world in which there are payoffs in different countries, dividends, call them what you want, output. And people can observe these payoffs, but this payoff follows a stochastic process, the expected rate of growth of which is not observable by anyone. So everybody has to be estimating all the time whether we are in a high growth phase or low growth phase. And what do people use to make that estimation? Well, they, of course, use the output or the payoff that they observe. This is one indication, but there's also some signals, some information revealed by whatever means. And all this information is public, but different investors process, interpret, analyze this information differently. In each country, the home investors are better equipped to give credence to a signal that is correlated with the home payoff. And they, however, they ignore the signals that are correlated with the foreign payoffs. They treat them as if they were pure noise. So they under interpret, under or do not understand, or whatever you want to call it, the signals that are relevant for the forecast of the future growth of the foreign payoffs. And so each group of investors must anticipate how its own opinion will fluctuate, and also how that of the other group will fluctuate. And in the eyes of each investor, the change of opinion and the resulting change of behavior of others is a source of risk, a new dimension of risk. It's a model of agreeing to disagree. They don't talk to each other to try to reach a common ground or anything like that. Each one sticks to their own statistical model, if you like. Is this plausible? I have listed here a number of pieces of evidence or testimonies that support this view. There's now a long list, the long literature in what's called the difference of opinion literature that is goes in the same direction. I've put in here a quote by Ariel Rubinstein, who cannot be suspected of believing in irrational behavior as a first hypothesis. And he points out that reasonable people, agents, he just called them agents, reading the same morning newspapers with the same stock price list will interpret the information differently. I mean, they get the same information, but they will continue to disagree because they interpret that same information differently. I've listed all kinds of bits of evidence here. Tomorrow you will hear my colleague Joël Pérez talk to you about the news coming from the newspapers and the media has an impact on the stock market. And maybe you will be kind to me and interpret that as saying that different people process information differently. But you will get to hear his paper tomorrow. So the math, I can just give you two little slides to tell you about the statistical aspects of the model. On the decision-making aspects of the model, everything is standard. People optimize, they have a lifetime utility function and so on. It's the their statistical processing, which is different. So there is some payoff, so in two countries, A and B, is a payoff delta IDT, and it evolves according to the stochastic process. Notice that the conditionally expected rate of growth of that process, FI, has a subscript T because it itself follows the stochastic process, which is mean reverting. And people do not observe F. They observe delta, and they observe something else. They observe a signal, S, which in each country is correlated with the unobserved rate of growth and shocks to the rate of growth. So the signal is truly informative. Huh? However, investors in the country, in country I, correctly interpret their own signal. That is, they will do their filtering, their statistical estimation, taking into account the correct value of this correlation coefficient phi. But for the foreign country, when J different from I, they will imagine incorrectly that the signal is pure noise. It's a pure Brownian. And so that's the assumption under which they will do their filtering, their estimation. And so because they think the foreign signal is pure noise, they will underreact to it, right? That sort of they did not take it much into account. And so they underreact to the foreign signal, and this will cause them to overreact to the foreign output. Otherwise, as I mentioned, besides this information friction or the information barrier, people behave rationally. That is, once they have obtained these beliefs, then they, under these beliefs, they optimize their behavior. Nobody, so it's not going to, for that reason, it's not easy to take advantage of them because they are not sitting ducks. They still optimize, but they optimize under the wrong, somewhat wrong beliefs. You can adjust, help yourself and make profits on their back. Okay, so let me just show you how the model works and well it explains the empirical evidence I have mentioned to you. So you remember first the first empirical regularity, the capital flows from foreign countries to home when the home stock return is high. And so I want to explain to you why this happens in my model. There are really, you remember that there are two kinds of information, the output or the payoff on the one hand, another news, which I called about the future payoff, which I called signal. Okay, so imagine what goes on. Suppose why these curly brackets refuse to. This is a curly bracket. I don't know why it only have printed half. But here is the story then that is developed in the model. Suppose there is a high payoff that occurs in the country. So we are. There's a higher value of the country dividend. What happens? The investors rush to buy the stocks of that country. So there is a positive increase in the price of that country's stocks. Okay. However, the revealed value of the dividend is not the only piece of information. There's also the signal. Half the price, the signal, the other news will also be favorable, in which case there will be little disagreement between the home and the foreign population because both all information is favorable. And so there will be little opportunity for foreigners to trade because if everybody sort of agrees, if you want to sell, you don't find a buyer and vice versa. But if the other news is bad, and you remember that the other news, the signal is discounted, is not properly taken into account by the foreigners, then the domestic residents are willing to sell their stocks, and that gives an opportunity for the foreigners to execute their buy trade. And you observe a capital flow. So we calibrated the model, and we did find a coefficient of regression of the capital flow on the price change of 0.75, which is well in the range of which has been observed by empirical researchers such as Kourkourou and others. Home equity preference. You remember the fact that home investors tend to own more of their home equity than would be warranted by a pure diversification model. Here the story is quite similar. The investors of a country react to the news about the firms of that country and thereby they move the price. The local investors, the investors of a country receive the signal, interpret it correctly, so when they receive it, they trade and that moves the price. But for the foreigners, this looks like simply a noisy movement in the stock price. So the source of risk drives them away, deters them. This risk they don't understand deters them. And so they will either invest abroad. And so this is, with our sentiment model, the kind of over-investment in the home stock that we are able to reach. Not quite the 75% of the US evidence, but 64% is already quite a bit compared to what would be 50% in our symmetric. This is, I forgot to mention, A and B are two symmetric countries. The number with no sentiment would be 50%. It is 64%. And even at the 5% at the lowest quintile, quintile is 5%, yeah. The holding of home stock is 53%. So most of the time, they do hold more of the home stock than 50%. Home and foreign factors. So you remember the data. There's an uncanny fit of the model with the data. When you look at the size of the betas on home factor and foreign factor, you get these coefficients, these regression, these values of the betas that are very similar to what you find in the data. And that's because the sentiment risk factor is correlated with foreign output. So it creates, it gives a proxy role for foreign output, which causes the two factors to show up with very different coefficients. Finally, for the cross-listing, based on the relative size of the two countries at any given time, and depending on the true correlation, you can get different percentage increase in the stock price as a result of the cross-listing. Our cross-listing experiment is a bit artificial. It's not a change over time from a situation of no cross-listing to a situation of cross-listing. It is a comparative dynamic exercise. We compare two economies with and without cross-listing, where cross-listing means that there is a stock which is correctly interpreted by the people of both countries. Okay, it becomes, when it is cross-listed, it's correctly interpreted by the people of both countries. When it's not cross-listed, it's correctly interpreted by the people of its own country, and it's incorrectly interpreted by the people of foreign countries. And so the price increase is quite large. This had been interpreted as a sign of segmentation of the market. But you could see here, there's no segmentation of the market. Capital flows are completely free. It is not a financial market barrier that we have. It is an information barrier, if you like. Okay. So to conclude, in a sense, in this paper, we have asked, what is a foreigner? What is a foreigner? Our answer is, a foreign investor is one who interprets news about foreign firms more correctly than I do myself. Okay. It's a question of being able to process the information. So because they had this different way of processing information, the sentiment risk, this difference of opinion, randomly changing difference of opinion occurred. It's randomly changing, but it's randomly changing in a systematic way. We have done the filtering under the assumptions I have indicated. So it's not as if we can fit anything with a completely malleable theory. There's a very strong structure in the processing of information that we have assumed. And so we have developed an equilibrium model of international differences in opinion driven by this misinterpretation of foreign information by home investors. And although the markets were perfectly symmetric, fully integrated, and all information was public, we have been able to explain four major empirical puzzles And they all occur as a consequence of this novel risk factor that we call the foreign sentiment risk factor. Forgive us if you don't like the terms, but the math is perfectly perfectly well defined. The language may seem loose, but you need to give a name to things. But the math is there, and it's a completely explicit model in closed form. Thank you very much.